accession number 19587, Real 1.
Peter Davy, Real 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Swindon, Wiltshire.
Which year was this?
In the year 1932.
Did you grow up and go to school in Swindon?
Yes, I went to Ferndale Road Elementary School.
And how old were you when you left there?
I was 14 years of age, and then I took an examination for a junior technical school for building, in which I'd done another 2 years.
So, in the Second World War, you were a schoolboy in Swindon?
I was indeed.
What was your address during the Second World War?
My address was at 470 Ferndale Road, Swindon. And during the war years, Swindon was very fortunate in not being bombed very often. But as a child, we had some waste ground and we would build bunkers and play in the holes in the ground. Little did I think at that time that some 10 or 15 years after I would be doing exactly the same thing, not as a plaything, but for a life existence.
You say there was very little bombing, but what bombs or air attacks do you remember?
I remember a Dornier coming over one morning at something like 6 a.m. and it was a lone Dornier that fired a cannonball into a gas holder that exploded and shattered the windows of my home. My father at that time had joined the LDV, which, as everyone knows, turned into the Home Guard. And I remember him firing a 303 Enfield at this lone plane. Quite amusing looking back at it, but nevertheless it was quite serious at the time.
Where was the gas holder?
The gas holder was situated about 300 to 400 yards from my home. And a vivid orange flash erupted. There was one act of bravery there that I remember, where the flames were coming out of where the shell entered the top section of the gas holder. And a fireman went around the gantry and plugged the hole with wet clay. I thought at the time it was a most valiant episode for that fellow to have done. I've never ever heard it mentioned again.
Any other air attacks you remember?
Yes, we had houses to go to whilst we were at school, as our homes were too far away from the school. And I remember a plane machine gunning the Short Stirling Works that were making planes. Originally they were the Great Western Railway Works, but they made Short Stirling aircraft during the war. And this plane was machine gunning the works. There was bombs dropped at about 400 to 500 yards away from me, and several people were killed and houses demolished. And this was late in the evening. My father, who owned a fish shop, we were open at the time, and the bombs exploded. And I remember this one particular bomb. It was a whistling bomb, and it was horrendous, the shrill noise that it made, and very frightening, as I was only probably about 8 or 9 years of age.
Was the works much damaged?
No, there was very little damage to the works. Most of the bombs that did fall around Swindon, or in Swindon, there were 40 people killed over a period of the war period, but lots of bombs fell in open ground, and the local paper has been doing an article on Swindon during the war years, in which it mentions several of the locations that the bombs did fall and the casualties that were received.
Was your schooling affected at all by the war?
Only in as much that most of the male teachers were caught up and went into the different services. One of my teachers, Mr. Loveday, who was a very popular teacher and sportsman, did come back in his uniform at school assembly, and everybody was agog looking at his decorations, as I do believe he had the DFC. And then a later date, we were all informed at the morning assembly that Mr. Loveday had been killed in the Battle of Britain.
What about your life as a schoolboy? Was it much affected?
It was a very much listening to father and looking at the papers with the maps that were being published daily as to the advances or things that had occurred in the European war. I remember very vividly when the Second Front was about to commence, that the road that I lived in, was about 1 mile long, was absolutely full up with American servicemen in their vehicles. And I lived on a cul-de-sac road, and a head popped over the fence, and it was an American GI saying, is there someone somewhere I can have a leak? Not knowing quite what he meant, and then he explained himself. I said yes, as we had an outside toilet. And before I knew what, 30, 40, 50 Americans were all using our outside toilet. And it was quite interesting listening to their different languages and how relieved they were to get relieved. Mother would sometimes invite American servicemen home, as she felt very sorry for them being thousands of miles from home. And we would have people, Americans and friends, that were, they became good friends. Two servicemen. One I remember his name was Preston H. Lacey, who came from Miami, and Hugh Wiley, which came from Wyoming. I've never, as yet, followed them up, but I suppose they would now be in their 80s. But they used to bring father this lovely tobacco-smelling tobacco, and my sister and I would receive candies, and they were able to come for a Thanksgiving dinner. They went to North Africa, and they gave a ring to my mother with Tunis on, which my sister has now. And they came back and looked us up after they came back from North Africa. But two very nice lads. And we used to play parlor games and play the piano. And we had a bagatelle board and skittle boards. And they would come from camp and visit my father's shop and have their fish and chips. And it made their life a little bit happier.
Was there ever any misbehavior by troops in Swindon?
There was. There's the usual, different units had aggression between them, but I never ever witnessed anything or heard. It was all hearsay that the local village pub where the Americans were stationed at a place called Chiseldon. The pub still stands today, but there was a terrific fight between the British Airborne and the American troops. And I believe the story was that the Airborne had inadvertently caused some chaos on one of the fronts, and it may have been short firing, dropping zones or something like that.
Did you witness this fight?
No, I was never went to that particular place.
What about any celebrations at the end of the war?
That I remember quite plainly. Father, having the fish up, he was allocated oil at the commodity that he, or the amount that he would have normally used prior to the war. And as fish and chips became a staple diet during the war, and the munition workers, and there was several places of industry around there, we would have an excellent trade on selling fish and chips. When the end of the war came, Father didn't open the shop, but he did start cooking fish and chips. Tables were laid in this cul-de-sac road, and the whole of the road, the parents laid the tables, and Father gave fish and chips to the whole neighborhood. Pianos were brought out, singing and dancing, and it went on to the early hours of the morning with a very large bonfire that burnt the tarmac off the road.
Now, can you tell me about how you came to be in the army yourself, please?
Yes. I became 18 in 1950. I was an apprentice joiner with a 5-year apprenticeship, and my calling up time didn't come until the 7th of December 1950, where I received a railway pass to go to Bulford Camp in Wiltshire. I alighted, I got on the train at Swindon Old Town Station, which is no longer in existence. And it was a single track that went to Salisbury. And when the train pulled in, there were lots of young men hanging out the window, and they shouted, "Are you going to join up?" And I said, "Yes." They said, "Come on in and here, we're all going." So the train went to Salisbury. We were met by lorries and taken to Bulford Camp. And that was my first camp and the initiations into the army days. After being at Bulford Camp some 3 to 4 weeks, it was made known to us that the whole of the 3rd Div, Wessex Division, was going to be transferred to Crown Hill Barracks at Plymouth. So after 3 weeks, we then went to Crown Hill Barracks, where I'd done all my basic training.
What was that like?
It was a bit of a shock to start off with, but I'm the type of person that makes the best of what there is to be done. I remember being on guard Christmas Eve and Christmas night, December 1950. We'd done all our training and field craft and weapons and becoming fit. And then we had another move to the Mersian Brigade in Lichfield, Staffordshire, where we joined many soldiers from the North and South Staffs, the Warwickshires, as I believe at that time the regiments were being amalgamated to make up, or rather recruits were being amalgamated from different divisions to make up a battalion to go to Korea. From Lichfield, we spent several weeks there doing more training, and then we went down to Colchester, where although we all had our Shire shoulder flashes, We were at Sir Brian Barracks at Colchester, where the Welsh Regiment was. Spent several weeks at Colchester and doing manoeuvres in Swaffham in Norfolk. Finally going to North Wales, Trawsfynydd. I did not know then, but I do now know, that if I was to be blindfolded and dropped in North Wales or dropped in North Korea, I would not know, because the terrain was identical in both locations. So obviously the training areas that we were then in Trawsfynydd and North Wales, were a prelim of going to North Korea.
What did that training involve?
Mostly field craft and direction and existing in situations and being self-preserved, or should I put it, finding how one could survive in open country at long periods, for long periods.
How are you supposed to do that?
By using one's initiative and the training that was given to us in the previous locations. There was quite a lot of bayonet practice, which I believe today I am told is no longer a training thing. But never having actually used the craft, we were very conversant on what to do if and when we were faced with that particular situation.
How are you supposed to use a bayonet?
Well, it's a normal drill that was taught to all infantry men, and that was to be excessively aggressive and make a lot of noise.
To frighten the enemy?
To frighten the enemy. I remember in training at Plymouth, we had one North Country corporal. We thought he was absolutely mad, and he would absolutely charge us with an unscabbard bayonet, pig sticker type, and we would have to parry. And he did meet his match, where the parry became a rifle butt in the cheek. He got up and complimented the particular person that done this to him.
What else do you remember?
The old soldier. There were one or two soldiers in my platoon that had previously had lots of experience, and as a 18 year and a half year conscript, one did tend to listen with tongue in cheek, perhaps, at some of the stories that were related to us by the old soldiers. But they did give us some good tips as regards becoming smart and paying attention to the lessons that were being taught to us.
What type of yarns did they come out with?
Mostly they would say that the characters that were teaching these particular things, they had never ever seen any action, and they didn't know what they were telling about. But you listen to me and I'll tell you how it was, or how we experienced it. It was one of those situations, as the war finished in 1945, then in 1950, many of the NCOs, although had been in the army some 3 or 4 years, had not actually experienced active service.
And then?
Right, from North Wales, we then went back to Colchester for a couple of weeks, and then went to Brecon. Brecon being in Wales, the Welsh regiments had all moved down to Wales, where we got kitted out for Korea. We had injections in our arms that were like, and our arms were like pin cushions. Gave us 14 days embarkation leave. Back to our unit in Brecon, where we were then trained, or rather got on a train and went to Liverpool to aboard the ship Georgic, which had just come off the 1951 Festival of Britain run. With she was a cruise liner, and the first thing that we had to do was take all our army boots off and use plimsolls all the time aboard ship, as the floors were not to be scratched at all. There were certain duties that were still required to be done, training. I personally went for serving as a waiter, serving at tables for each meal. I remember the first breakfast that we had, and it was whole mackerel. And we had been at sea probably less than 24 hours, and quite a number of my fellow had got seasickness. And of course, I arrived at the table with mackerel, and everybody ran out and went to look over the side. The toilets were quite funny, actually, because everybody that was seasick, there were no toilet doors on the one ship. And it wasn't the Georgic, it was a ship coming back, but it just triggered my memory of a troop ship where there were no doors, and people used to sit in the cubicles watching each other. But from the lighting the Georgic, of course it all had a civilian crew on, and it was quite interesting talking to these guys that had been ferrying people from Australia she came off of. And the food was excellent, because it was civilian chefs on there. And the journey to Pusan, where we landed, took approximately between 5 and 6 weeks.
In what kind of mood did the troops go to Korea in?
I don't think they, at 18 and a half, it was somewhere around about August of 1951, maybe September, when we actually got on the ship. So most of the people had only been in the services 9 months. So in that 9 months, they trained them from civilians' jobs, doing all sorts of things, to a fighting force, or what was deemed to be a fighting force. At 18 and a half, 19, going back for 50 years, I don't think many of the people, I certainly was not really aware of the situations that we were going into. I remember my father standing on Swindon Station when he said goodbye to me with a tear in his eye, as he had served in the 1914-18 war. And he said, I thought I was fighting the war to end all wars in that war. He again served in the Home Guard in the 39-45 war, and here he was in 1951 saying goodbye to a son to go and do something that he thought was no longer going to be in existence. So that journey took that 5 to 6 weeks. Calling at our first port of call was Aden. Certainly it was my first visit to a foreign country. I remember it was very, very hot. And a lot of my colleagues, or pals, they got tattooed. I made a promise to my mother and, before I left. And she said, promise me two things, son. One, that you'll never get tattooed. And two, that you won't go with any loose women. When I arrived home, I rolled up my sleeves and said to Mother, look, Mother, I never got tattooed. And she said, what about the other thing? I said, I can't remember what the other question was you asked me. So that's where a lot of the lads got their tattoos, in Aden. Aden through the Suez, and then Colombo, or Sri Lanka as it now is. Very, very beautiful city. Remember having tea in a departmental store restaurant. I remember the girls there, they were Eurasian and very beautiful. Back aboard ship, again, a few more days at sea. And it's Kowloon. Singapore, I beg your pardon. It's Singapore. And again, being let off the ship at Singapore, walking around the town, city of Singapore, I remember people, the big wide monsoon drains in the streets, and there were several jewelers' shops there as well, and there were men sat outside the jeweler's shop with 12 bores. Obviously, there had been a lot of rape, burglaries and things like that. And from Singapore, then we go to Kowloon, Hong Kong. And again, seeing the Chinese, the first thing you see, being a young man in 19, is the split skirt right up to the side of the leg, which was quite eye-catching. And the rickshaws, and life in Hong Kong, as you've seen it in your geography books. And it was actually experiencing going to these places that you'd read about. And you were actually walking the streets and seeing it for real. So then another visit that was ended, back onto the ship. And then finally disembarking at Pusan, where we then went to a reinforcement base depot. We weren't there many days and were then put on trains to Seoul. And I believe that took quite some time. I can't remember right at this moment how many hours, but it was quite several hours train, because it was virtually up the half, over half the peninsula of the Korean Peninsula.